welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 95. It's our first real podcast of the year, Secret Art Game of the Year show. Check it out. A ton of awards are given out. And we finally declared a single year Game of the Year contender, winner, I should say. This past week, though, has been chock full of news, and we'll get to that in just a second. We're going to kick it off. We have Daniel.
Hi.
And we have Chad this week.
Yo!
There you go. So yeah, I'm sure you folks have been saying stuff. Daniel was just telling me about Black Ops 2, and this was cut out of the Game of the Year show because it made no sense whatsoever. But we spent a good portion of that talking about Binary Domain, so hopefully we'll get into that a bit week or next week, since Chad forgot to pick up his copy. But we're actually going to start news this week. Just because there's a lot of major news this week, actually. Or major, different, unique, interest, I don't know, it's out there. And I think we're going to start off with the one that kicked off this week. I think it was like Sunday night or Monday night, but NVIDIA announced their foray into the handheld market with the Shield.
Who is this for?
This is for people who were on the fence about the PlayStation Vita and figured they needed Android-based games to really push them over.
I just don't understand, why does this thing exist?
I'm just scared this is going to blow up in their face, so then they have to make their graphics cards even more expensive to recoup lost funds.
I'm happy
about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought part of it was because, if I'm not mistaken, all three of the major manufacturers aren't going with them this generation. They're all going with AMD for their graphics cards, so they're probably like, crap, we have all these graphic cards, we need to do something with it now. Just screw them over and make our own handheld system.
If this was a demo unit for Tegra 4, which is the new mobile chip, then I could totally get it, because it's a good way of sort of showing people how games would perform, and they're given controllers to play them. But I thought this was just a look at our new hardware, our new chip device. But it's not. It's actually a thing that is actually happening, and it's actually going to be sold to actual people. And I just don't there's several problems. Number one is it's probably going to be fairly expensive because it has its own screen, which is quite big, and it is a controller, and it's got state of the hardware in it. But Android has no games. I'm not just being cynical and saying mobile games are bad. Android games aren't very good, and if they are, they're not the kind of games that you play with the controller. I just, other than GTA 3 and Vice City and Max Payne, basically anything by Rockstar, what are you going to play on it?
You don't need this to play Angry Birds. I mean,
that's the point.
It's so insane because, Daniel kind of, the form factor is another issue because it kind of...
You can't put that in your pocket. That is not going in anyone's pocket.
No, it doesn't look like a very portable, friendly thing because it's basically a controller with a fold-up screen, which I assume is fold-up, but I don't even know how you do that because then you're just going to be laying it on top of the buttons, and I imagine that's going to cause some screen squishing problems or whatever. But it basically looks like somebody took an Xbox 360 controller, found a spare screen they had laying around, decided to attach it on top and call it a handheld. I don't see it being very portable, friendly. Granted, you can probably say the same thing about the Vita and the 3DS XL. But this just looks like it's a disaster waiting to happen. I'm afraid of the screen popping off. I'm afraid of the controllers messing up. There's a lot that can go wrong. And the other thing is, it's like Daniel said, it's like, what's the market for this? It's it's going to be too expensive for people who play these games on their smartphones, and this doesn't add anything to those games. Like, it doesn't change Angry Birds, it doesn't change Cut the Rope, it doesn't change any of that. And this won't have the games that Sony and Nintendo produce for their handhelds, and I don't see many third parties jumping on this bandwagon.
And the thing is like, is let's say I'm in the market for a new phone next year, or late this year, when this thing's supposed to come out. Like, why should I get this instead of a Tegra 4 phone, which can do everything that can do, and it can call people, and I can browse the web with it, you know? And I don't understand, like, it just seems like what they tried to do with this whole Steam streaming thing as well was, obviously, it's to get people to buy NVIDIA graphics cards. But
you should be doing it anywhere.
I want to buy... when I want to play a PC game, I will sit down at my PC and play it with a keyboard and mouse.
Yes.
I wouldn't walk around the house, because, let's face it, it's not going to be practical doing that anywhere else but within the house that your PC is in. And, like, if you're in the house, then and walking around, you're going to be doing something else, and you're not going to be wanting to play PC games. It just doesn't make any... It just seems like it's an act on feature to sort of give it an edge that nobody else has got, but it's not a very good one. I would rather go out and buy a PlayStation Vita than this thing.
Yeah, and well, we're not going to touch on that. I think we beat up on Sony enough. But yeah, it's one of those things that, again, it's like it's being made with the idea of we want to enter the video game market, but we don't have an audience for this. Like, you know, everybody points to the growth of the iOS and the Android marketplace, and that's not necessarily because people buy these devices as gaming devices, but because they have these devices and you can happen to get games on them. So this pushes to kind of get, like, okay, you know what, everybody wants Android-based games. Which, as a fan of Android, I have an Android phone and an Android tablet, is a much inferior marketplace to the iOS just because Android market is so segmented.
And this is a point that was made on the Penny Arcade report, was we've now, so at like the Android phone market is very, very, very fragmented, and now what we've got is we've now got an Android gaming platform fragmentation in this, because we've got the Ouya, we've got this GameStick thing, which like recently passed its Kickstarter goal, and now we've got NVIDIA.
Yeah, and it's yeah, it's just kind of insane. Like I said, it's always funny to see, because even as somebody who owns, like I said, a phone and a tablet, it's like sometimes I can download apps that will work on my tablet but won't work on my phone, or won't work on my tablet but work on my phone. And it's like, you know, if that's something, and these are both products that are about a year old, and going forward you're going to have these high-end consoles, it's going to be like you're going to have that support for that. And it's going, you know, like it's, there's no market for it right now, and there's no clear path to victory.
NVIDIA may have grossly misinterpreted the success of Ouya, and Ouya was successful not because people want Android-based gaming devices, but it was successful because people want something that is not what we have now.
Yeah, and this seems, I mean, like they're pushing, I mean, as far as I know right now, they don't have any exclusive games in development, so these are kind of ports of us. But, what was I going to say? Yeah, they're pushing the same type of games that we've seen don't really work on handhelds. Like, one of the games they're showing is a very, very generic-looking first-person shooter. And it's the same thing that it's the same thing that didn't sell too hot on the Vita, and it's the same thing that doesn't sell too hot on the 3DS or whatever, and you're just going to continue with that.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know, NVIDIA has, you know, they come up with some really good ideas, and they've got really smart people, but I don't know where this came from.
I could see where it came from. It's like there's a, you know, like we've just got reports, you know, the video game industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, and people want a piece of that pie, and they aren't getting it because they aren't partnering up with any of the console makers this generation, so... that, like, we have these graphic cards, we need a way, you know, a PC game, and as we talked about, while it's a decent market, it's still not a huge one compared to the console or handheld space. As far as, you know, like, there aren't many people who go out and actually build PCs. But, you know, you get people who play simple PC games, browser-based games and stuff like that, but you don't need an NVIDIA or AMD card for that.
Yeah.
So.
It's a really ham-fisted attempt to enter the market, which probably most likely won't end well.
Yeah, it's weird. But, I mean, since we're already on the target of new hardware announcements, I don't know the official name for this. It's not the Steam Box. According to everything that came out this week, there's not going to be a Steam Box. There's going to be multiple ones. And this seems to be like an early prototype from, I think, XI, or I don't know if that's actually pronounced.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The modular PC, which makes this makes complete sense for Valve, really. Like, because you can. You buy the shell and you can plug basically the parts that you need into it, and then it does what you want it to do, you know, whether it be, because Valve said that, you know, if you want to install this on it, go ahead, you know, we're not going to stop you. So you could buy one of these things, I don't know, and use it as a media center, or just don't put a beefy graphics card in it, or you can play games on it if you want, or, you know, it's a decent idea, and I think the people that would just flat out think, yeah, I was just gonna make a games console like it's conventional, like a conventional console like the 360.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, personally speaking, I think this is a bigger deal than the Shield, but I also think that if this does take off and if it's priced reasonably, I would see myself kind of abandoning my next Microsoft or Sony system for this, because the idea of getting, you know, it's not going to be a state of the art PC. But the idea of getting a, you know, a mini PC that I can hook up to my TV and that has the Steam backend, because Steam does a much better job of selling you games than the retail space does. When you can get all the major games at the end of the year for like $10 a piece, that's a much better investment than, like, yeah, you'll get sales like that, but that's still a much better investment. You don't lose your games. You know, you can own them on multiple devices. You own them forever.
And you have all of the conventions that consoles have as well, like updates of your games. And it's not intuitive because it just happens when it's on.
Yeah, and, you know, it will support controllers. So, I mean, it's, you know, at that point, for Microsoft and Sony, it becomes a game of exclusives. And while I think they do produce good exclusives, I don't think it's going to be anything that I'm going to miss if I, you know, like, if you just go with third-party multi-platforms that own on the PC, that's still a huge portion of the video game industry.
And so. The only thing about this is I hope whoever sort of decides that they're going to invest in manufacturing these, I hope to make it. That they need to make sure that they make a profit no matter what configuration people buy and whether they buy software or not, because people are going to buy these things and just ignore the whole Steam side and just wipe it and put Windows on it or put whatever flavor of Linux they've got and use it as a server, be it media server, whatever.
Well, I was going to say, I think the people would have to make a profit on the hardware anyhow, because they are a hardware developer, but as far as I know, they don't make software, so it's not even like you can get that model where, like, you use on the hardware, but you make it up on the software, especially, like we said, if a lot of this stuff is going through Steam. So, I think the idea is there, and I'm kind of curious to see how it all pans out and when it comes out, because it's an interesting idea, it's an interesting push, and I'd love to see more of it. One not so good announcement, and one very, you know, huge potential announcement as far as hardware goes this week. The other big announcement this week is for a sequel, which we know the video game industry hates, but people are showing up with this apparently. Pokemon X and Pokemon Y.
I said Nintendo releases a for the Pokemon game on 3DS, I'll buy one, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to wait until near October, because that's when the Xbox prices are going to be cheaper, or maybe we'll know about some redesign if there's ever going to be one by then. But I'm going to get one.
Or maybe they'll do a Pokemon 3DS XL Special Edition bundle.
Maybe, and I might go for that. And because I've only asked for three things on 3DS, and I'm going to get two of them, which is, two of them have been announced, which is a new Pokemon game and a new Phoenix Wright game. I'm just waiting for the Final Fantasy VI remake.
I was about to say, we've had several Professor Layton games. I think there's only two Phoenix Wright games.
What? There's technically Ace Attorney, there's six of them.
Well, no, I'm talking about on the 3DS. I'm talking about
on 3DS, there's none of them.
Well, not in the States, but Professor Layton and Phoenix Wright crossover out in Japan. And I think there's an actual Phoenix Wright game announced for this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's the proper one that's been announced. So, yeah, today, this year's 3DS, thanks to Nintendo.
Yes, but going back
to it's fucking good. Pokemon X and Y look great.
Yeah, it's, it's the first 3D Pokemon game, full 3D Pokemon game. No more sprites, no more of that. It's fully 3D models. Diamond and Pearl, I still don't count as colors, but people are saying X and Y are the first non-colored base games.
Well, Gold and Silver aren't colors, nor is Crystal.
Gold and Silver Gold and Silver are colors in the sense that you know what they are. I mean, granted, they're gray and very piss yellow, but they are, like, you can get gold crayons, and you can get silver crayons. Granted, that's not the best metric I know it's a fair metric, but it is. Like, gold is a specific color, as is silver. it's semantics. Like I said, diamond and pearl aren't either, but...
But it's an interesting naming scheme because, and I realized this, like, I was talking to Tom and I realized it. And so we've got Pokemon X and we've got Pokemon Y, and they said that there was three of them, so the third one is obviously going to be Pokemon Z.
Pokemon Z.
And X, Y, and Z are the planes of 3D.
That I thought was an awesome little thing. Because that was the first thing I thought of when I saw the names. Is like, this is a kind of cool, like, this is the first 3D Pokemon game. And they're using the axes of a 3D game.
Yeah.
And one, you folks say Z?
yes, we say Z.
And we say
Axis. None of this Z crap.
None of this Z crap. Z is awesome. Z is ugh. But, yeah, and the other thing, and I think this is kind of cheap, because I'm kind of curious to see what they do with Z, is the Pokemon, the legendary Pokemon for each game is actually shaped like the letter, so the...
If you look at it,
the names came out this week. The name starts with X and Y as well, but the Dare has two antennas and then the egg, so it looks like an X, and then the other giant one has the wings and then the tail, and that looks like a Y. You can even see it in the logo. It has their little... So, yeah, it's a name that works on multiple levels. And it is different. It makes you know that it's not necessary. I'm sure it's a continuation of the Pokemon franchise or story, whatever you want to say, as far as Pokemon goes. But it's different because it's not a name. And it's not a color scheme. It's not a emerald or a gem or something like that. And it makes you know. And that's what they're trying to go for. I mean, we don't know a ton of details about it. It looks like you might encounter the wild Pokemon. You might actually encounter them on the map now, which is kind of awesome. The battles are fully animated. Animated Pokemon. It still kind of looks like Pokemon Stadium and not like the Pokemon actually attack each other. And it looks like there's going to be new Pokemon as always. I think they said this time the game's going to push them over 700.
Yeah, but, what is it? Black have 640 something, so they're...
I'm not saying there's going to be a whole lot of him. I'm just saying this is going to push them.
Yeah.
Just said that's good. So, like he's 60 or 50 or something like that.
How many we need? 150.
No. Wait, Chad.
Please don't start this, because I went through this the entire week, because I didn't know that there's a cult of Pokemon purists that for you said Gen 1 was perfect, and nothing was wrong with Gen 1, and Nintendo has been screwing it up ever since. So, there's a cult of that, and then there's another group that's formed recently, I guess I don't pay attention to the Pokemon fandom enough, because there are people who are like, Gen 5 is the best one, and there's crappy Pokemon designs, but they're still original and creative and all this other stuff, and this is why I don't do fandoms.
Yeah.
They're insane people.
let's put it this way, Chad, right? I'm not gonna play anything else after this, right? How shit would it be if there were only 151 species of animal on the planet in real life? Really shit is the answer to that question.
That is back. Yep.
So there you go. You can't. Oh, let's just stay at 151. That's bullshit.
Yeah, because
it's unrealistic.
Because there
are
three.
Really,
there's a whole time dedicated to three Pokemon. Then.
I would say this much. I don't necessarily agree with Chad, but I do think that for a Pokemon game, they should kind of stream back the number of Pokemon, because there are a lot of Pokemon that kind of serve the same purpose.
Yeah.
Especially with Black and White, where they decided not to go with any of the old Pokemon at first. So what they did is you found a Zubat replacement, you found a Rattata replacement.
This name even rhymes with Zubat.
So, yeah, it's like, you don't need, like, oh, we can't do Zubat, so let's do a new Pokemon that's exactly like Zubat, but we don't call him Zubat.
And we'll call it Woobat.
So yeah, it's like,
wait, really?
Yeah.
Yes, really. It's
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because they wanted to do Black and White differently. So a lot of the early Pokemon are just kind of the ones you find the first time through. Like, usually you start off, you find the Rattata, you find the Pidgey, you find the Caterpie, and all that, Metapod and all those other Pokemon at the start that you don't end up using by the end of the game. So they just kind of replace them with similar looking Pokemon in Black and White. And it's like, yeah, we don't need all of these doubled up Pokemon. And, some of the people can kind of get rid of their evolution charts and stuff. Like, you don't need 50 versions of Eevee. Even though I think there's only 7 of them. But, I don't think more is necessary the case in this Pokemon need. But yes, and I assume everything else is going to be fine. Pokemon, Nintendo's always done a decent job with the online, I think.
Yes, they have.
It's a fairly simple game as far as online goes. And the only thing is, I've never been into like EV training, so I don't do the competitive scene. But like trading and playing with your friends is a piece of cake. And I've heard, I don't know if this is 100% true, that you can customize your character now.
Really? Oh, my God.
That would be an interesting addition.
They can do whatever they want to this game.
That reminds me, we didn't mention this, and this is, Daniel kind of hinted at it, but this is huge news as well, is that it's getting a global worldwide release. Most everybody's getting it October 2013.
Nintendo finally learned how to release games like the rest of the video game.
I don't want to come off defending them, but I will say this much, that I think RPGs are a very tough genre to localize at the same time. Most Japanese companies still don't do that well. Just because they're so tech-heavy.
I'm pretty sure they have the money to do it, though.
I'm sure they have the money. I think it's just it's just easier for people at times to get the game, get it done, and then ship it over to get it localized instead of doing the localization while you're making the game. They're doing it with this. At some point, this seems like they're getting the grasp of it. On the other hand, we're getting Fire Emblem a year later. We're getting Animal Crossing a couple of months later. So, just sending mixed signals.
Baby steps, Nintendo.
They do have an entire localization branch here. So, there's that as well. And I think Europe has one as well. So, they have two localization companies.
Is that what Treehouse is?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So, but I mean, at the same time, they probably do a ton of games. I mean, I can imagine all the work that they have to do to make those Mario platforming games eco-friendly. But those games usually come out worldwide at the same time, so
yeah.
There you go. So yes, it's going to be a huge, huge. I mean, it seems like everybody's on board the 3DS now.
Yep.
I've already got one, so it's not a big concern to me. It's going to be interesting because I assume the Wii U is going to be their focus for most of this year after this. But the 3DS has a fairly decent start. It has Fire Emblem, it has Animal Crossing, it has Luigi's Mansion, it has Castlevania. Then it has Pokemon at the end of the year. There's this huge chunk in the middle of the year where nothing's like announced as far as I know.
Yeah, but that's video games, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Yeah, but I mean, it makes sense if you're Sony and Microsoft because you have, you know, everybody seems to be pointed towards you having a new console at the end of the year, so it makes sense that your thing stops. It doesn't make sense if you're the Wii U, the 3DS, or the PlayStation Vita because you've been on, especially if you're the Wii U and this is your first year and you know you're going to have stiff competition coming up.
Yeah.
The Vita, 3DS have been on the market for more than about a year now, so they shouldn't have these huge gaps in announcements. I mean,
yeah,
granted,
they just have their foot on the toes during that time.
Yeah.
But we never know, Nintendo may just offline now, something any day now.
Yeah,
they scheduled their Nintendo Directs like 2 days in advance, so.
That was another point I wanted to make. It seems like, I mean, we've had this discussion before around E3, but it does seem like Nintendo's getting more and more away from the idea of, like, you know, like a major press conference type event. Because we've had the 3DS XL was announced at a Nintendo Direct after E3, and now Pokemon, which is, I don't think there's any argument, it's the biggest handheld franchise there is announced at a random Nintendo Direct in January.
Well, they could have had it at E3.
They could have had it at Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah, they could have.
They could have had it at the VGAs. They could have had it at GDC.
Well, I kind of like them sort of trickle feeding announcements.
Oh, I prefer the Nintendo. I mean, from a business standpoint, and even from a fan standpoint, the Nintendo Direct works in the sense that one, it's a lot more concentrated. It's like, okay, you know what? You know, like E3, and we go through this. It's like E3, you have the three major publishers, then you have all the third-party developers. So you get hundreds of announcements and games and things fall through the crack because
yeah.
You know, you can't. Because this is like, okay, Pokemon came out, and Pokemon was the talk of the internet. Well, Pokemon is still the talk of the internet as far as the gaming circle goes because every little morsel of detail is being combed over by the fans. And it works in that sense.
And it feels more personal as well. I like sort of sitting back in my chair watching a video of Mr. Iwata. What Mr. Water does.
Yeah, I would prefer that they go, you know, I would prefer that all three go this way more often. I still say that E3 should be kind of, you know, E3 should be the centerpiece, new hardware announcements. You should save some new games, some major new games for that as
yeah.
well. But, you know, there are, like, if you're a Nintendo, like, if you, I know this is not going to go well with some people, but if you announce something like F-Zero or Punch-Out, you know, any of those, like, B or C class franchises, those can kind of come at Nintendo Direct because they stand out on their own, whereas something like a Mario, Zelda, or a Metroid can do an E3 because those are types of games that kind of, you know, when they announce, no matter when they're announced.
There's things that everybody wants to see.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the same thing with Microsoft. Like, you do Halo at E3, you can do Fable at, like, a random Microsoft event, though, or Froza or whatever. Sony kind of does this because, you know, we have Destination PlayStation next month, and that's usually where their road to E3 starts, where they'll start announcing stuff. We'll probably get more footage of Beyond and The Last of Us and stuff like that. Especially being that most of their major games announced so far come out before E3 this year. God of War, Ascension, The Last of Us, I think are all out in March and May and stuff like that, so that's good.
They're trying to get things out of the way before they announce something new.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we don't talk about rumors. I will just say this much, if the rumors of those systems are correct, I don't know how they're going to be cheap. I have no idea what's going to happen. We'll cross that bridge when that happens.
It's important for them to worry about, not for us.
Well, it's for us to worry about, and I guess we can jump over to this real quick. Is December MPDs came out, and we kind of got the year-end totals. The Wii U's not off to a great start. It's not off to a hot start at all. And this would make three consoles, I mean, a console and a handheld, two handhelds in a row that have kind of not started well. And
it's going to be different.
You think what?
I think the sales for a high-end console is going to be a lot stronger in terms of the Wii's technology is kind of the cutting edge. What we expect from the Xbox and PlayStation is exactly
that. Yeah, but here's the major problems with this. As far as I see, is one, if you're Microsoft and Sony, how do you transition people into your next system? I mean, with Microsoft, they just gave us a Halo. They're giving us a Gears of War this year, and those are their two biggest franchises. They can do something new, they can do something new, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's enticing people. The next major franchises are Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, and I assume Activision and Ubisoft, as much as they would like to support Microsoft and Sony, are still going to do it on this gen of systems as well, because that's where the money is currently. So, like, what's the incentive to upgrade to the next set of systems?
New hardware.
The thing is the feature set of the new consoles isn't going to be radically different from what we've already got.
Well, I mean, there remains to be seen. We don't really know what the new consoles are about yet. It could be anything, really.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's even if it's power, if it's connect to 2.0, if it's move or whatever, it's like, it's going to come down to the games. It always does. It doesn't matter, because my other point was going to be, as bad as the Wii U is doing out of the gate, it's still starting faster than the 360 and the PS3 started. And those were technologically more advanced than the Wii when it came out. So you're kind of in the same boat. It's like, it's not a technology issue. It's not an issue of, like, this has this much horsepower, this has this next. It seems to be a matter of price and games. The Wii U launched with, and we said this on the show, it launched with games that would be cool if I had the system, but not games that I wouldn't go out and buy a system for.
Yeah, I mean, remember too, the Wii was like something completely different.
Yeah, and that's why I'm using the Wii. That's why I'm using
the Wii. Which is something that still could happen.
Yeah, and it very much can happen, but it seems based on the rumored specs that Microsoft and Sony are going for the power race again. I mean, Microsoft.
But
doesn't necessarily prevent
a new type of technology.
What I'm saying is, like, if you go with that and then you go with a new technology, it seems like part of it is that, like, a lot of people aren't willing to invest $300-$400 in a system. So, like, I mean, Microsoft can go the other direction and go with a subscription-based model. You buy the base for $100 and you spend, you know, 3-year contract for, like, I don't know, $50 or something a year. That wouldn't work out well at all. But, you know, what I mean, like, go with that cell phone model, basically. And that can work for them. But I'm kind of curious to see where those two are heading and what they're going to do to entice people as far as next-gen and picking up their consoles go. Or, you know, there are going to be people who buy it because it's a new system and it's pretty and stuff like that. That happens. But, and there was a report that came out this week that 42% of the 360 and the PS3 sales came after the remodel and the price drops with the two SIM models and Kinect and Move. So that means that, again, it's not the high-end stuff that people are looking for. It's more of the – it's a cheaper price, and it's some type of distinguishing feature. And we have to see what Sony and Microsoft are willing to offer in that regard. But neither here nor
there. There's no questioning, like, those things help, but I think both of these systems will probably sell out through the holiday.
It depends on how much it is and what they're offering, honestly. we'll talk about this more when they actually announce these things and we have a better idea. Speaking of things that were announced and probably don't want to talk about, The Walking Dead Survival Instincts.
I need to go and get something that I can vomit into.
Well, I mean, in my experience, it's not always great when you announce a game and then ship it in 2 months. It's not always great when you hide the game that you're shipping in 2 months. They're saying that the footage that came out is old footage, but nobody's showing new footage. So that's kind of worrisome. And the other thing is that this game has less than a year of development time, because it started... It's from the company that made Kinect Star Wars, and they started this game after that game came out. And that was last April, if I'm not mistaken.
You know what happened the last time Activision rushed a game out that was licensed in less than a year?
I was about to say, Activision, we had Call of Duty to Justified, and we had 007.
Yeah.
I didn't know where you were going.
Oh, 007 Legends.
Oh, yeah.
Whole studio closed down.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, actually, both studios closed down, because the people, actually, they didn't close down. They're no longer doing console development. The people who made the Justified.
So there you go.
So, yeah. Hopefully, this is high, right? Alright. But yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be an interesting time. I don't expect this game to be good at all. You know, I've heard a lot of people complain about this kind of reaching off of the Walking Dead telltale game. I mean, it's not really that, because this game started development even before the first episode came out. I just assume this is honestly based off of the video game, not the video game, wow, this is based off of the TV show, not even the comic. So they probably just got the license for the TV show and tried to rush it into production.
Yep.
Activision licensed games rushed, you know that means gold, and it also means you can probably find it for $10 in April, so if you really want to check it out.
So help you if you really want to check it out, but...
This was announced too. There wasn't much on it. Lego Marvel Superheroes.
We should get a Lego Marvel versus DC game.
I wish that would happen, but that I mean,
that would
it's
be cool.
Lego, it's Lego, it's Marvel. I
probably... Marvel versus DC, anything Lego or otherwise.
Yeah,
you
can
get, NetherRealm to make it.
I don't think that.
Yeah.
I was gonna say I don't think they would want NetherRealm. So it's gonna be interesting because. Since Marvel's owned by Disney and Disney's doing their own game development now, and DC's owned by Warner and Warner has their own game development. I don't know how they're going to come to that. Maybe we can do what Capcom and Namco was supposed to do with Street Fighter X Tekken and Tekken X Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Is Tekken X Street Fighter still a thing?
Yeah. But.
Yeah, I haven't heard about that
in ages. It's been kind of quiet. And I still think, like, it's Konami, right? That makes sense. They're like, yeah, we'll do it, sure, whatever. And the Capcom guy. Namco, sorry. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's, it will be interesting. It's an Echo game. They're fun. They're good fun. I honestly don't know how big that Travia Tales is, because they seem to turn out these things like nobody's business. They had two last year. They're making two this year, at least two this year. And I mean, granted, it could be that these aren't really radically different games, so that might help. But yeah, excellent. And finally, the big reveal of this week. Well, the big game reveal of this week, it seems, is Cyberpunk 2077 teaser trailer.
This is one of the only times I'm going to forgive a CGO trailer, because it's so cool. I like Cyberpunk stuff.
Well, I haven't checked it out. I haven't checked
even
it out.
The Witcher 2 was pushing it pretty hard.
it's a CG trailer, and if I'm not mistaken, it's a game that's not coming out until at least 2015.
2015?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
Or maybe later.
Oh, I want this game now.
We've had this discussion before, and you know, people are very. I honestly don't think 2 years. I think 2 years is way too early.
What is it? I really expect that what they're going to do is just sort of polish the engine. So. 2 years, million content for an RPG, maybe?
Well, it's not a content thing. It's just an announcement thing. Like, they didn't have anything ready to show, really. It's a CG trailer for a game that's out in two.
Well, we had the announcement. What was it, back in July?
Oh, I didn't even know. But it's just one of those things where I think to announce a game this far in advance, just because what's going to happen is you're not going to hear anything about it for a while, and then you're going to hear this game's been canceled, it's dead, they're no longer making it, and then once those come out, you're going to hear somebody come on and say, "We're still working on this game, please bear with us." Because, I mean, you can't sustain hype for 2 years. I don't know of any game that sustained hype for 2 years.
That's true.
And I mean, especially...
It's a CD Projekt Red game, so... I don't know. Maybe they could do it.
I mean, maybe they can do it, but the thing is, it's not just a game. Because, one, we know that if it's a game that's 2 years in the future, it's not for this gen of systems. So, you know, you have two new systems being announced in that time frame, at least two new systems being announced in that time frame. You have a bunch of other, you know, like you're going to have the next-gen titles and stuff like that come out and wow you and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff that's just going to distract you from that, and there's no, as far as I know, there's no business sense in announcing this ahead of it, because it doesn't do anything for your brand. It's not like people are like, "Oh man, this game's out in 2 years, I'm going to hold off on buying anything else until this game comes out." It's cool now because there's nothing else really this week, you know. But come like March and May, are we going to be talking about this?
I will. If nobody else is, I will.
About Cyberpunk?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. When I saw the trailer, I heard about the 2015 thing. I was like, why are we even...
Yeah.
Why bother with it?
it's kind of like, wow, it's insane. And that game was announced, and it ended up crashing and burning, and people stopped talking about it. Overstrike.
Or even, that was just announced, which is fine, but like, there's no point to start like the marketing. I don't know.
Yeah, Overstrike was a game that had the same thing. That was a year it vanished. People turned on it.
Maybe it's Fuse.
Fuse.
Yeah, but the thing is with Overstrike is that game vanished, and when it came back, nobody wanted it anymore because of what they'd done to it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing. It's like, I assume this is, I mean, granted, it's a CG trailer, but again, 2 years is a lot of time in development. They could change ideas, they could retrofit the idea, they can streamline it, they can, you know, a lot of things change in development, which is one of the reasons, again, you don't want to announce it so far in advance. And the other thing is sometimes you get snagged up on productions. I mean, Joe, we mentioned Agent, Final Fantasy Versus 13, The Asgardian.
Oh, episode 3.
I mean, some of these games are going to outlast this generation, and they were announced at the start of it.
Last Guardian.
Yeah. It's just, there's no real incentive to announce it. Again, I guess you are the big three, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, and you want to announce this with your new system so people are excited about something. I get that, because, you know, you do want to say, you know, like, this is our roadmap. Here's what you get in year one. Here's what you get in year two. That's fine. Third-party developer who has no stake in this, who has... Like, it's not going to help sales of The Witcher. So it makes no sense to announce it. It's just like we're working on something. But, I mean... I'm sure it's going to be a good game. I'm sure it's going to impress, but... We have 2 years to worry about it, or not worry about it. So there you go. I think that's it for news. If you folks had anything to add.
Nope.
Okay, then really quickly, we can talk about stuff we've been saying. And we're going to start with Jason, because we've been dying to hear about Shackdown.
Yeah.
Shackdown. On iOS, what is there to say? I mean...
But you have to start with the premise.
Setting up a great premise, where it's like post-zombie apocalypse, but zombie infections mutated, and now people who are zombies are like these crazy zombie-ish, but like physically enhanced and like sentient evil beings. And Shaq is like this superhero that like speaks fear to them. And I don't know, it's pretty ridiculous and over the top, but also hilarious. And then actually started playing video games. And I guess to describe it, I mean, it's kind of an auto-run game. And you switch back between, there's like three horizontal like levels. So you move, you're auto-running and you move him up and down. And you can tap the other side of the screen to throw a free throw. It's what they call it. And he just throws a basketball, which I was joking with Earl. Like, only like half of them should hit. Then that was the case. This was a true Shaq game. But that's the basic mechanics. And then as you're running, you want to run to zombies, and Shaq like, punches them out of the screen. And it's like you're chasing high score. And then as you progress further, there are different types of zombies that come up. Like, one you have to hit with a basketball first and then try to tackle it or punch it or whatever. And then another one is, like, the behemoth guy. And you just have to avoid them. Like, you can't punch them at all. So, but it's pretty basic. It gets old really fast. And to make it, like, the worst thing about it is just the controls are just not responsive at all. And
is that the point of a mobile game? Sorry, carry on.
Of a what?
Of a mobile game.
Oh. Well, I mean, a lot of mobile games control really well. Like, Rayman Jungle Run, which is also an auto-run game, had fantastic controls. And it's not even... The controls aren't that complicated. It's just, like, the main mechanic is fighting up and down. To the different levels, and it just sometimes just doesn't work. I have to do it like three times, and it'll go down two, and then it's just it's not responsive. And it's especially where you only have one life, and if you die, you go back and do it like you know all over again. It's like one of those that just it builds up like infinitely. And then
have you figured out how to unlock the other two levels?
No, so there's two other levels, and I don't know. They don't have unlock requirements, so I would think it should pull up a score that we'll take it again, but so far, so I don't know, it might be even more wrinkles of mechanics, but God, those controls are just awful.
Which is really odd for an auto run, because as the name implies, there aren't really many controls.
Hey, by the way, it comes from like the prologue, where it's like, the zombies are scared that they're going to get a Shaq down. Like, beat down. And it is so ridiculous.
Well, I would be afraid if I got a Shaq down as well. So, yeah.
And Shaq isn't even in this game. I don't get
it.
I mean, you play as him, but there's no, like, voiceover or anything. Like, they just have some generic dude, like, voices the menus and then like fronts and whatever, but it's not Shaq.
Which is weird because like, I swore that Shaq did work for this game. Like I saw, like I thought like, if you Google it, it's like he did like motion capturing, but I guess that isn't true.
Well, it doesn't sound like him at least.
It would be awesome if Shaq was given a Shaq impersonation during the game. But yeah, you'll have a review for that sometime this week, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Daniel has been telling us about this little niche game that he's been playing.
Yeah, so it's a game that I don't think anyone's heard of. I know it didn't get very many sales, and I hear the publisher's just trying to stay afloat a minute. So if you can, I would buy this game to support your fellow indies out there. It's called Call of Duty Black Ops 2. It's okay, I guess. Like, it's not. It's like the multiplayer is better than it has been in the Modern Warfare series, with exception to 4, because nothing beats 4. They've made it so you can pick anything you want. So if you want a class that has like 6 perks and just goes around knifing people and has no weapons, you can do that. And if you want a class that maybe has 3 attachments on 1 gun and then and 5 perks maybe, but you can do that as long as it like the sort of parts you pick add up to 10, which is kind of nice because it means I can do whatever I want and I don't have to be sort of shackled with this very limited customization system. I don't I'm not a fan of the map design online. It just seems like Clips taking the world ones that were the most popular at the same time and just sort of made them again. Just obviously with a different theme. Single player, I really do not like sort of the it's really juvenile. The gratuitous fireworks in it, like you're on a boat and you get attacked by this guy, and the main character, like you, you slice the guy in the side of his face with this big knife, and his sort of jaw kind of drops, and his tongue hangs out, and it's like, why is this necessary? You know, like I'm not, but under 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds play that kind of game, play Call of Duty, but that's the only sort of person that would actually get any enjoyment out of that kind of thing. Just like, and then it's a shame because like the campaign is, he's kind of self-aware in the sense that like somebody at Treyarch said, right, so we're doing this near future sci-fi kind of thing, so let's make up all kinds of crazy gizmos and stuff and let's put them in there at some point, you know, and it's kind of got a nice sense of humor when it comes to that sort of thing. But then like when the game sort of is over dramatic and takes itself too seriously, it just all falls apart. All in all, a Call of Duty game, the latest one, is pretty much the same as the last one, just a bit better. It's not going to convince you if you like Call of Duty. And unfortunately, I'm not really a fan of it. It's like the multiplayer is cathartic at times, so that's why I play it and why I bought it, and because I wasn't paying for it. So I'm not complaining.
You pulled the Jason. I think that's his excuse for playing Black Ops, was that somebody pointed for him as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, have you been playing anything new, Chad, since you didn't get Binary Domain?
Nope. I started Far Cry 3. Madness is pretty and turned it off.
Wow, what went wrong there?
Nothing. I just, there's no reason for anything that I did in that story. It's just that's what happened. I'll turn it back on and play it more later, but that's my experience with Far Cry so far.
Okay, I was just curious because a lot of people I've been, you know, talking that game up and down all. Well, I don't want to say all year, but that has been the case. So, yeah. Did anybody check out Anarchy Reigns?
I don't know, console.
So no, I didn't even realize that it came out until a few days later.
The advertisement has been not non-existent.
So you got advertised as much as Bayonetta and Vanquish did then.
Yeah, pretty much. Or any platinum games. Who's publishing this one? Is it Sega?
Sega
or
again.
This is their last one, right?
Yeah.
I will say this much. I find it funny. I was late in development and the system's like 2 years old, but I do find it funny that they didn't do a Wii U version since the main character is actually from a Wii game that was never ported to the HD systems. And Bayonetta 2, as we know, is a Wii U exclusive. So you would think that if you're Nintendo or Sega, you'd kind of get on that boat so you'd have some type of momentum going into Bayonetta to actually have that character appear on your system at some point.
Yeah.
And
it can't hurt just to have, you know, just to have it on another console.
Honestly, at this point, I mean, Platinum needs solid. Platinum is.
A lot of people I know that either have Wii U's or would buy Wii U's are the sort of people that would buy Platinum games. So
yeah, I mean. It seems. I mean, at this point, it's not Platinum can be picky as who they support because it's not their games to rocket numbers on any one system. So it helps. And again, if you're, you know, they. I mean, honestly speaking, they are pretty much exclusive with Nintendo throughout the rest of this year. Once Metal Gear Rising comes out, because their next two games are Wii U exclusives, and Bayonetta 2 and The Wonderful 101. So it's not like they don't have experience with that system. At the same time, this game is something that came out last summer in Japan. It's just being ported really late to the States. So
apparently it's a very Marmite game.
A very what?
Marmite. Oh, you don't have Marmite. So Marmite is, it's a sandwich thing. It's usually
sandwich filling known to man.
People, the slogan is you either love it or you hate it. Because that how people react to it. They either really hate it or they really like it. And that's,
people absolutely love that.
Oh, I love Marmite. I love it.
Marmite's delicious.
Yes. So that's so if something's Marmite, it means people either love it or they hate it.
Very. I need to try it. So there's that. I've been trying to finish my Pokemon game that I started about a year ago when Jack came out. Actually,
you haven't finished it yet.
I haven't finished a Pokemon game since Red and Blue. So there's that.
I thought I was bad for not having finished Diamond.
Am I like the minority in the world because I buy a Pokemon game and actually finished it?
Well, I mean, you're also, if I'm not mistaken, you're also the one of us who, didn't you?
Buys every Pokemon game.
Well, no, I thought you got, didn't you get a ROM of Black and White so that you can play it early, though it's Japanese?
I bought Black and White, and I finished it and completed it, and I got a ROM of it so I could play it again without wiping my save.
So, yeah, I would say of all of us.
The end game, I was really disappointed in the end game in Black and White. So I was like, I'm going to start the game again.
Okay.
To be fair, Pokemon games are all in Kana anyway, so they're really easy to read.
Yeah.
Directed at a younger subset of the population. So
Mention, because the way the game's set up, with the battle interface, you get the same strings coming up again and again and again. Yeah. So once you've seen it once, you know what it is, you know what attack it is, and what it does. So.
But okay, Jason's stepping out. I don't know if he left already. But real quickly, I wanted to try something different. Since it's always awkward to ask people for questions, I mean, it happens. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. I'm going back to something we tried last year, and then it just kind of fell off because we had so many things to do with it. I'd ask you folks a question, but I'm adding to it, and you've seen it if you follow me on Twitter. I've asked this question already today, and I'm going to see if I can get various questions every week to share.
Is that the one I asked the answered?
Huh?
Yeah. Is that one I asked? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And I don't know if Chad has because he hasn't responded, but I was asking today, because a lot of times. As the reason this came up is I was reading a survey, and a lot of times people always ask, like, has a video game ever made you cry? And, I mean, sometimes it has, sometimes it hasn't. I haven't really cried at any. I know people have. But it's always, crying isn't the only emotion that people have. So I asked today, what is the strongest emotional response that a video game has triggered in you, and which game it was? So you two, Daniel's already answered, but you two about it.
I can answer again.
You're going to answer again. I'm just
going
to
know what mine is.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two time to think about it, especially Chad. I just wanted to read off some of the ones we got, because I posed this out, and at some time, we're going to have to transition to the actual account. You folks need to use it more, but I asked people, and I got various answers and various different types of emotion. From Quicksand Buddy, I got Tales of Symphonia, made me sad, not cry sad, but almost cry sad. Zephyr Game, I don't know, Gammy. Mario Party 2, Pure Rage, which I kind of agree with. I've had this discussion with my friends. Nintendo games are very cutesy aesthetically. They make you and your friends become the biggest, baddest bastards to each other, and it just drives people nuts. I can't think of a Nintendo multiplayer game that, at the end of the day, like even New Super Mario Bros. Wii and U, which are co-op games, makes me hate my friends. Okay, so, hate in a good way,
way.
I don't even know how you pronounce this one. I don't know. I cry like a baby every time I start and finish a new Kingdom Hearts game. Stories about adolescence with strong agency really get me. Nathan. Darahem, I'm not ashamed to say I bawled pretty hardcore when Ares died in Final Fantasy VII. It Rock, the original Silent Hill terrified me to the point I couldn't even look at the disc without feeling sick.
Well,
Final Fantasy VIII defined a lot of my weird adolescent romantic longing stage from my teen years. Martin, since he's not here, and it's his default emotion, anger, too many reasons, and a lot of game.
Oh, yeah, I know that feeling.
Patrick TNA, Anger and Rage, too many games to pick. I'll go with old school with tossing a Sega cartridge around the room. I used to do it as well. I don't do it anymore because I actually broke my original Genesis that way. Firecrest XB, most of the songs and characters from the Lunar series evoke some very strong emotions. Too bad Dragon Song suck cock. I'm reading these as they come. Omac Brother, both Final Fantasy VII and The Walking Dead have made me incredibly sad. Wet eyes and holding back. Tear sad. Let's see what else we got. Dax the 23 Jacks, the Kingdom Hearts series in general, but especially Rechains of Memory. Kevin Ketchum, Mass Effect 3, Sobbing Tears of Joy, Sadness, Just Enough. Probably because he realized how much BioWare screwed up.
Just Hilarion.
Kowtow 93, Spec Ops the 9, and Guilt. And D.A. Clark, Mass Effect. The side mission made me uncomfortable and questioning of the decisions I made, but the end was just solid awesome. Okay, Daniel?
So, it's been I getting a lot of games. I had this a lot with Duke Nukem Forever as well, was the relief of not having to play it ever again. It's just, why? And who thought this was a good idea? Like, the whole of Duke Nukem Forever, I suppose you could apply that to. But, like, and it's not always in a bad way. Like, I mean, there was a point where, in Mass Effect 2, and I kind of thought about this after a while, after playing it, and it's the, when you get a choice between, when you're in the guest ship, you get asked if you want to destroy all of them, or if you want to basically brainwash them to join your cause. And I was like, okay, I will. And it's a fairly morally ambiguous thing. And then I found out, like, that it was like, there is a good and a bad thing. And I'm like, well, why didn't they make it so you got renegade points no matter what you did? So it's an interesting sort of thing that makes me question why people didn't do this or why people did do this. And I kind of like that because it sort of, I don't know, it gives me sort of a, it means that the game means more to me than just what I'm being seen on the screen. Now I'm done. I don't know. Maybe something else.
What about you, Chad? Did you think of anything?
Two things pop immediately to mind. One is Metal Gear Solid 3. That ended. If you've played it, you know. And if you haven't played it, go play it. I'm not going to spoil it. You need to play it. That's one hell of an ending. God damn.
hold on, just real quick. What emotion, though?
Oh, complete and utter just grief. Sadness beyond belief.
Okay, I didn't know you could show that, but go on.
Nor not. Nor have I since, but during that one interesting moment. Another one, I don't even know if it counts. It's like, just utter rage. Just rage, 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 rage. Every time I play StarCraft.
Yeah.
But that's why you play.
And not, like, anger. Because anger and rage are completely different. Like, anger is one thing, but rage is just blinding, seething hatred.
I knew you could show that.
That's what StarCraft does to me.
Okay.
I'll put it like this. I've only ever cried to one point in one game, and I'll never ever tell anyone what game it was and what point it was, because I'm actually too embarrassed.
There's nothing to be embarrassed about crying at a game.
Really?
Oh, yes,
really, I'm not gonna. Let's just put it this way: it was a Game Boy Advance game.
Was it Pokemon? Was it when Ash Chef Pikachu?
No, it wasn't.
I know that you didn't answer the first question, though. But
can we move on?
So it is a Pokemon game. Now I'm going to figure out which there's only one Pokemon game for the GBA, right? Or, I don't know. But, yeah, as for me, I mean, I mean, I to sound cheesy, the ones that tend to elicit the most emotion for me tend to be Mario games. Just I've always found them to be pure joy to play. It's one of the reasons one of the reasons I love the franchise. I mean, if you ever actually see me play them, and I always find it, I don't know why people record themselves playing video games, I find it awkward, but I wear like this huge shit-eating grin whenever I play a new Mario game, and it's one of those things, like, you ever feel yourself smiling all the time? If you can just feel your face. Yeah, it's like that whenever I experience a new game in this franchise, I always wear that grin, and it's like, you know, it's been 20 some odd years for me now, and you know, I say 3D, 2D, new, old, whatever, and it still is that emotion for me. It still takes me back to a place where I feel like I'm a 5-year-old kid experiencing this whole new world, and it's one of the greatest joys in the world for me is playing a new game. And most play games does this for me as well. Only when I play with friends, though. I don't like online games for that reason, and because I don't have a competitive nature as far as online games go, because, like Chad said, I don't like to feel rage and anger and all that other stuff. So I don't try to play competitive, because once you try to play competitive, that's where those emotions start coming from, because you can fail, and you know, there's a fail state and all that other stuff, where if you just play for the play's sake, that's cool. I will say this much, while it didn't make me cry, The Walking Dead did elicit, it actually got me upset at characters. Like, there were moments in the game that I won't spoil where I realized that I wasn't making decisions based on rational thinking or logic or anything. I was making them based purely on my emotional connections to certain characters and their behaviors. And I thought that was a really neat thing for the game to do. It's like, you know...
Yeah. Watching it, I was like, shit, why did you do that?
Yeah, and at some point, yeah, and you know, the part of it is being on the timer. Like we've mentioned this before, it's, you know, like with Mass Effect, you get time to think, and usually it's like, this is a good option, this is a bad option. With The Walking Dead, you're on a timer, and sometimes it's just like, what do I want to say to this character?
Yeah.
What do I want to do to this character? And it's not like, oh man, this is going to be good for me, this is going to be bad for me. It's like, this is what I want to tell you because I really hated what you just did. They know who they are. And that was when I realized that, you know, this is why I think The Walking Dead is a game you should play, because it does do something like that. At the same time, I also realized that The Walking Dead isn't really a great, quote-unquote, video game. So, there's that. So, yeah, it's also interesting, I think Daniel mentioned something like this, and we got two responses as well, is that sometimes the emotional response you get from the video game, and I guess Chad falls in this as well, isn't from the necessarily from the video game, but it's from your outside perspective. Like, getting angry at a game isn't... You're not getting angry at things that's going on in the game. You're getting angry at the game for being broken or the game for being cheap.
Yeah, why was it designed like that? Or why couldn't it have been like this?
Yeah.
And sometimes it would have been much better... And it would work with this mechanic in the game if they'd done this instead.
Yeah.
I just send cupcakes to BioWare on every other company that I have grievances with.
Yeah. So it's okay. Interesting. It was just a really fun. I thought it was an interesting discussion, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully I can find a question or you folks can submit them in, and we'll try it out. It's a different thing, but it's not. I have always been a fan. Participation or getting people's opinions on this show, so we'll see how far this goes. But for Jason, who came in late, left early.
Fuck him, he left. He doesn't have to say goodbye.
Daniel, Chad, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 95.